there's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Shouldn't you be at work?
Oh, here's Gascoigne. Gascoigne, he can finish it here! Paul Gascoigne! 2-0!
Lampard! Brilliant!
It was in, goal!
That surely crossed the line!
Oh,
it's so far in!
Thanks very much, Sepp Blatter.
Clean sheet, I call it. It's one of the most important things in football.
Nice to see the home fans booing you.
Emil Heskey, could it be five? Yes, it is!
Paul Bowden to take it. Oh, and he's hit the crossbar!
Gerrard, it's Carroll! What a goal by the England striker! That's why he was brought in, and he's done the job.
Saved! John Pickford! England on the brink!
Now, you know him better than anybody, probably. Do you back him to score quickly, yes or no?
Yes.
Oh, he hasn't!
No!
Hit leg!
Hello, welcome to Quickly Kevin. Will he score? It's the England versus Senegal post-match reaction. I'm Chris Skull. Joining me, as always, Josh Widdicombe.
Hello.
And Peter Schmeichel. Welcome to Michael.
Hello.
That's it. That's the intro. Thank you to Mark Phillips for sending that in. Do send in your intros to hello@quicklykevin.com and hopefully make them better than that one.
I like that one.
Yeah, it's all right, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The other one he sent in, which I'll just use now. Hello all, Alan Ball. Brilliant.
Yeah. Well, we will come to Alan Ball
on
the show. Yeah. It was England versus Senegal. England won 3-0. Should we do some... Is it... Well, we'll have this discussion on the podcast. Would you prefer to have the match now, or do we still want to do some correspondence? I feel there's so much good correspondence coming in. People can wait for the match, because it's not even that big a match, is it? It was just a stepping stone, right?
Yeah, let's have some correspondence.
Yeah.
I'm Jim Rosenthal, and this is the Electronic Postbag.
You've got mail.
Okay, apologies are needed from us. We've had a lot of emails about this. So, thank you to everyone, but Gareth Savage is the one I'm reading out. I keep emailing, but I can't help it. Firstly, and this is the thing we need to apologise for, this is new news to me. It was the other knee that Alfie Haaland had surgery on and didn't recover from, not the one that Roy Keane kicked. So your sliding doors moment is incorrect. Other people have described it as a long-running myth that Roy Keane's kick... took Alfie Haaland's career out. I'd always thought that was the case.
Yeah, me too. I had no idea.
Yeah. I am actually going to contest that. Yes,
well, because I'm going to contest it with about 68 people
who've
emailed
really?
In.
Well, it's his left knee. Alfie Haaland's left knee is the one that was the issue.
Yeah,
and in my mind's eye, Roy Keane comes into him from the left.
No, someone sent in a photo of the challenge,
and it's his right knee.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. All right, never mind. As you were.
Interesting to learn, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Secondly, in 1990, Ireland and Holland, do you remember what group they were in? They're with England, weren't they, in the 1990 World Cup. Yeah. They finished level on points, goal difference scored, and conceded in the group behind England. So they had to be drawn out of a bowl on Italian TV.
Oh.
Wow.
I wonder that footage must exist.
He's attached the YouTube footage. Yeah, he's attached the YouTube footage.
Can we see it?
Yet we, being Ireland, were obviously overjoyed to get Romania and not West Germany. Two very different stories there, couldn't there? Attaches the footage. Here we go.
Oh, my God. Wow, look at this. It's Sepp Blatter's doing it.
Sepp Blatter, yeah.
This is kind of what I imagined. It's quite official, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just wanted to see how it was set up. Wonderful. So you've got like a marble room, a long marble table, FIFA behind them, live from Rome, Sepp Blatter. They've got the pots with balls in them. Very official, isn't it?
Yes, there you go.
In a weird way, I'm a bit disappointed because you'd want it to be a bit more amateurish than that, wouldn't you?
To me, drawing lots implies two pieces of straw and a hand. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like drawing straws. Because this is balls. It's the same as any old FIFA draw. And to me, it implies the team captains are doing it rather than Sepp Blatter. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Nick Hemsley writes, "Hi lads, loving the bleak existentialism of your World Cup episodes." Great description. "I too am constantly asking myself why I'm not more nervous, excited to watch England. It begs the question, would England crashing out of this particular World Cup result in you feeling crestfallen yet relieved?"
A wonderful
the
throwback
dual
to
emotions
Steve
Bruce challenges readers to explore in the mirror at home.
When we were winning the Euros final, I remember thinking, I wouldn't be too disappointed if we lost. Like, I was just so pleased.
Yeah.
But then when we did actually lose, I was absolutely
you
devastated.
Crestfallen, yeah, relieved.
Yeah, I was crestfallen and not relieved. So I think it'd be the same this time around.
On the reason I'm emailing in, I have a question. If Zidane becomes the next France coach, as expected, didn't know that, but there we go, doesn't sound out of the question, is he required to serve a touchline ban in his first game of a counter his sending off in the 2006 World Cup final?
That is a wonderful thought. That is a wonderful thought. There needs to be some justice for that.
I'd think so.
Do you know what? Here's a question. What happens with old bands like that? Do you know what I mean? Like, there must be on record somewhere that should Zidane ever try to play a game of international football, he would be banned for it.
He'd be suspended,
but
in
would he, having missed the next France game, would he have therefore served his ban? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, what? Because was
France
he eligible
next played,
for the next France?
Yeah, when France next played and he didn't play, is that the ban served?
No, but was that his last ever game of football? Or was that his last ever game of international football?
I think it was his last ever game.
I think it might have
so
been.
So do I, yeah. In which case, I don't think he'd be registered as a player, was he? So, oh my word. I don't know what the answer to that is.
How does the bureaucracy of that work?
Yeah.
Is retiring a thing you do? Or is it just a thing you say?
Yeah.
Talk about more existential questions.
Do you have to send a letter to Sepp Blatter saying...
But what are you retiring from? You're just saying, I'm not playing football anymore. But remember when Paul Scholes... Like, do you have to, be a registered player?
Yeah, I think he might have to be registered. So perhaps Zidane, once he's handed in his resignation, he could argue that if prior to that point France had played any games, they're eligible. But I suspect he probably would have to serve some kind of touchline ban, yeah.
Just to confirm, that was Zidane's last ever game. He retired in 2006. But interestingly, he wasn't really... He was still a first teamer for Real Madrid in the 2005-06 season.
Of course, he was playing.
29 games he played, and he's played in the World Cup final. That is... one of the best retirements, isn't it?
The best.
Is there ever been a better retirement than that?
No, definitely not. Some people believe that's why he did it, don't they? But I don't think it is. Players born in England who won the World Cup. Hi, chaps. Long-time listener, loving the World Cup episodes. This is Christian Dutton. On the subject of players born in England who played in another country, you've not mentioned Simone Perrotta. Anyone want to give some details on him?
No idea.
He started all seven games for Italy when they won the 2006 World Cup. However, he was born in Ashton-under-Lyne in Manchester. His parents ran a pub in the area, and he ended up moving to Italy when he was five. So unlike Erling Haaland, he would have started school in this country. His achievements have not gone unnoticed, though, as his local council built a statue of him, Jeff Hurst and Jimmy Armfield to celebrate their three World Cup winners.
That's amazing. Yeah.
I guess the real question is whether you could really fit Lampard, Gerrard and Perotta into the same midfield. Keep up the great pods, all the best, Christian.
That is incredible, isn't it? Ashton Underline. You see, like Simone Perotta feels so exotic, and Ashton Underline feels like where Wallace and Gromit
yeah,
was
it's,
set.
It's the perfect way, yeah. Yeah, it's good that, isn't it? So there we go. There's so much more, but what the way I'm thinking is there's quite a lot of dead time until the France game on Saturday, so I imagine we'll go through a lot more emails in the week.
Just one more thing. Christian Vieri. He grew up in Australia,
born
didn't he?
Born in Australia, didn't he?
Because he's got an Australian accent, hasn't he, when he speaks English?
Yeah, I think he was born in Australia, was he?
Oh, he was born in Bologna.
But born in Bologna.
Moved to Australia as a child, and then returned.
Oh, there we go.
Returned to Italy to start playing football. Incredible.
There we go.
Yeah, more.
There we go.
Yeah, more of those.
Right, so it was England versus Senegal. We watched it apart. We did talk to each other as we went, also sent some voice memos. This is how we experienced England's, whatever you want to call it, you know, lovely 3-0 round of 16. It's the second round. Let's call it the second round win.
So it's time to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. No one posted more points or scored more goals in the group stages than England, but from now on, there are no second chances.
This is minutes before England kick off in their second round game.
It's too close, isn't it?
Really
it's
close.
Too close.
How are you feeling, John?
It's 2 minutes before. I'm annoyed at myself for how close this is because I was too busy doing household tasks, which shows you the difference between this and every other World Cup, where I've prioritised it above all else in my life.
It's a weird vibe tonight. It's Sunday night. I've just put the kids to bed.
It's
knackered
weird.
On
Sunday
Monday
night
tomorrow, and it's like, oh,
it's the wrong day.
This is a World Cup
it's
game.
The wrong
it's
day
a
for
really
football.
Most important England game in 18 months is about to happen. It's surreal, isn't it? This is the first time I felt this is really surreal.
Do you know what? I'm slightly bored of the analysis of people going, everyone thinks we'll beat Senegal, but they're going to be more difficult than we think, and you're going, there's got to come a point when enough people have said that that we're no longer talking about how everyone thinks we're going to beat Senegal.
Yeah, in fact, I don't know anybody that has said that version of it. Everybody I know has said, no, this is a really tricky game.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. No, I haven't heard that from anyone.
But all I've heard it from is people who are claiming that they're sticking their neck out by saying it's not going to be easy.
I'm going to go the other way. 3-0. I'm going to smash them. This is going to be the easiest game so far.
4D has spent the last 48 hours texting me trying to make plans for where we watch the game on the quarterfinal next Saturday night. He's probably the one person I'm like, calm down. I'm not making any plans until tonight is over.
Find a Senegalese bar for Senegal v France. Is that what you're going to do? I could do this just ghosting through air, to be honest. I'm really tired. I could do without extra time and penalties.
I do think there's a version where we just win this quite easily.
Yeah, there is.
From everything I've read, the predictions are England should win this quite comfortably.
Yeah, I think because our group stage was so, there was a lot of dross in that group.
Yeah.
It feels like a step up, whereas normally it does. It feels like you've played a team of this level by this point.
Yeah,
do you know what
yeah.
I mean?
I think it's a classic second round game we win. But
well,
never. Let's see. Let's see.
Let's see. Let's go into it. I'll see you at halftime.
Oh, that's a mistake by Saka. It's given away to Ismaïla Sarr. Cutting in on that right foot is always a danger sign. It's Diab. And it's a good save by Jordan Pickford. First real save of the night. Requires a big hand from the Everton goalkeeper. This is Kane. Bellingham's made a really intelligent run. Bursting, trying to get away from Diallo. Here's Jordan Henderson. Now they've done the damage. England fans can sit a little more comfortably now. Fantastic move. The first move that England have pulled together.
You fluky, fluky cunts. That is just not on. That is not on. Jude Bellingham, lovely flick from Foden. I like the way that over 38 minutes we just lulled them in and then hit them on the break. Absolutely. We've robbed the lead here and it is totally unacceptable. If you'd bet me that Jordan Henderson would be scoring for England at the start of this tournament, I didn't think we'd see him touch the ball. Well, we haven't tonight. Am I bloody right?
I bloody love Jordan Henderson in this team. He just makes me feel so calm and relaxed. He reminds me of when West Ham used to have Rob Green in goal. You just kind of, you know deep down that things are probably going to be fine. And that's what Jordan Henderson does for me. And I love, he's kind of, he's the old hand in the squad, isn't he? The experienced guy. And now he's on the score sheet. I think our World Cup may have turned around when Southgate put him in the team. I love him. I'm here for it.
I forgot there was a period where West Ham didn't concede because they had Rob Green in goal. Amazing you didn't win more Champions Leagues during that period when, whatever the game, the fact you had Rob Green in goal totally defeated the opponents. God, what a bunch of smug bastards we are. Exchanging banter when 4 minutes ago, we're all, I imagine, in our separate homes, complaining that England were absolute dog shit.
Son, he's given it to Jakobs and then gone darting forward. Jakobs trying to get the ball into the centre. Picked up by Cis, and Bellingham's going to get there first, and England might be able to counter-attack here if they're quick. Bellingham, he's got space for Foden on the far side, Kane running through the centre, Kane's got a big chance here now, it's Harry Kane, and England lead 2-0!
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, you weren't going to keep Harry Kane off the score sheet for long. One step closer to becoming the greatest England scorer of all time. And one step closer to the World Cup quarterfinals.
Can I be the first to say that was an appalling finish? Awful. How did the goalie not say, this is mental? We have been shit. Absolute shit. Jude Bellingham is fucking incredible. He's our best player. He's our best player. Not just now, but our best player for the next 12 years. Him and Foden. Just build the fucking team around them. Look at Bellingham there. And then Foden, not a great ball, but fine. And then Kane's finish. Straight at the goalie who dived out the way. Mendy, you've got to have a word with yourself there. Look at that. Oh, dearie me. I actually feel a bit embarrassed, slightly ashamed. This is, to be English, a bit, it's a bit just, it's not really on, is it? Playing that badly and being 2-0 up.
England 2, Senegal 0. Weird. We're 2-0 up.
Sound more excited, Skull.
We got on the Zoom call 5 seconds ago. You were buzzing. We start recording, you sounded depressed.
It's just weird, isn't it? Because a half hour of that was really tense and like, oh my God, we might be going out here. This is the shock.
I'm being generous there, 38 minutes of it. And tense implies both teams giving it some. We were fucking dog shit.
Do you know what really changed? What changed, it seemed to me, Lee Dixon made this comment, was that we just started going direct. We just started long balling it.
Oh, no, here we go.
It's like Sam stint, it made a difference to this whole England cancer.
No, because we lulled them in, didn't we? We pulled them out. And then we hit them with the over the tops. That's how it works. Whereas with Big Sam, when you're hitting the number 9 from minute 1, they're not going to. Then Jude Bellingham might be the best England player of my lifetime
he's
already.
He's so good, isn't he? I can't even tell what footed.
So
is he
good.
What footed? Because that ball he played for Kane
or was it Foden to start that move for the second? It was like, he was using both feet. I can't tell.
Oh, he's so good.
Yeah, he's incredible, isn't he?
And he's really young. But then we said that about Gazza in 1990 and Wayne Rooney in 2004. Like, you go, oh my God, he's going to dominate tournaments for years to come. In 15 years, we'll go, God, do you remember that World Cup where Jude Bellingham was good?
Can we talk about the celebration of the first goal? So I read a lot into celebrations because I think it really shows the team dynamic. And Henderson and Bellingham just went head to head really intensely. And Henderson just goes, I fucking love it. And they also did that thing when Henderson scored. They did that thing where they point to each other. I love it when someone does an assist and the scorer scores and they just point to each other. I love that.
When
so
they
much.
Did that, what bit, how much of Mason Mount's heart broke? Like, Bellingham must go, come on, Hendo, be a bit, come on, mate, don't put me in this position. Yeah. That's the old head on Henderson. He's gone, if I do this, Southgate's going to go, well, I can't break up that partnership against France.
Look at this bromance we've got here. How can I ever split that up?
Yeah.
Yeah, clever.
Yeah,
clever
exactly. Player. Mount's hoping Rice scores and runs straight over to him. Michael, how have you experienced it?
I loved it. I thought it was great. I think obviously a bit cagey to start with, but that's understandable in a knockout game. I thought brilliant save from Pickford.
Oh, wow. Little what, bit a cagey. Save
what a save that was. A
little bit cagey. You know, Maguire gave the ball away a couple of times, but also we're trying to play out, we're trying to break the press, so that's okay. What I loved about this team was it never felt like they panicked. Like, this is what it's like to be good.
We have to make this the episode title if we win.
Yeah, this is what it's like to be good.
Here we go, second half.
Good from England again, and Kane, who thought he was going to get support from the left-hand side, ran into a spot of bother, but Foden has managed to get through, and here is Bukayo Saka! And the tournament's top scorers go up another gear. Watch how Foden rides this tackle when it comes in. The timing of it's perfect, just watch this. He knows it's coming. And he just leans his hip into it, and he just rides it. And then this touch from Saka, he's onside. Watch this, just a little dink. He knows Mendy's going down. And he knows he has to get something on it, just to lift it off the turf. It's brilliant.
I think we're better than Brazil 1970. 3-0. Phil Foden's fucking incredible. Astonishing. Lee Dixon's just said, bring on the French, I'm ready, as if he's got anything to fucking do with it. Lovely Dixon, but come on, Lee. You're not going to be commentating on it. It's going to be on BBC. Oh, the curse of ITV. That's a load of bullshit, isn't it? Look at this. Phil Foden. Oh, my word.
60 minutes on the clock, and I have to say, I'm enjoying this now. I'm relaxed. I think we're going to score more goals. Are we going to win the World Cup? I think if we play France, we're going to find out in that quarters, you know, whether or not we're good enough. I think we're better than France, but we'll get on to that. I'm getting ahead of myself. This is a fantastic performance from Southgate's men. Oh, what a Sunday night.
England 3, Senegal 0, full-time, and David Seaman is trending in the UK after that revelation from Lee Dixon that he fosters cats. What an evening.
Some of the commentary was inane in that second half, wasn't it? It was just like,
I thought, but that's absolutely brilliant goss, no?
Floats your boat.
So how long do you have to foster a cat for until it gets a new home?
How does that even, yeah, you raise a good point. How does that even work?
Such a difficult pet to foster. They naturally, you know, need to build up their trust, don't they?
I mean, to say that you're fostering cats implies that you have to be doing that at scale. And presumably he's doing that in his own house.
You don't have to be doing it at scale.
But, you know, if you're fostering one cat, it's not really a talking point, is it? You need to be at least five cats.
I think it still is. I'd say, if I was fostering a cat, would I mention it to you? Like, presuming that Lee Dixon and David Seaman are good friends, yeah? And I think we can take that as read.
Yeah.
Should we talk about the England game?
No,
this is far more interesting.
Would you mention to me if you were fostering a cat at the moment?
I don't think I'd lead with it, but if I spent enough time in your company on a particular day, it might come up.
Say Seaman and Dixon
have gone for a round of golf.
Yeah, then it comes up. Over the course of 18 holes, I think that's top 10 on the agenda.
I don't think it comes up. There's only one scenario in which it comes up, which is that Lee Dixon goes to David Seaman's house and there's fucking loads of cats everywhere. And David Seaman needs to explain why. And that's the only... Because you're never going to mention that. When does it come up? Like,
what are you, so what are you up to?
Yeah.
Why have you got scratches on your arms?
Quite a bit of fur on your jumper there, David. What have you been up to?
Do you think there's any danger that Dixon has said foster when he meant adopts? Because you're right, fostering a cat implied, because my mum used to foster kids, but the process was they are coming from a home or a situation where they need to be removed from, and you're preparing them to go to a longer term place. Is David Seaman just really great with troubled kittens about rehabilitating them? Old safe hand Seaman, they just feel so secure in his giant palms, and then they go on to their forever home.
You make a good point.
I think he is right with fostering, because adopting, you wouldn't use the present tense. You know, you'd say he's adopted some cats. You wouldn't say he's consistently adopting cats. Also, everyone who gets a cat has adopted a cat. Like, none of us having a cat naturally. He's going to have a big house, almost certainly with fishing facilities, if I know anything about David Seaman. I bet those cats get some lovely fresh fish, don't they? When they move out, I bet they're very picky about their whiskers. Not their actual whiskers, the food.
You know, I've got relatives and like friends have got like three or four cats in the house, and all their houses always smell. So David Seaman's house, if he's fostering cats at scale, must really stink. And again, that's why Lee Dixon says...
You've got to remember that you've added the phrase at scale. Lee Dixon didn't say at
Lee
scale.
Lee Dixon has walked into this house going, what is that smell? Why are there so many cats? And David Seaman says, he's just come up with fostering them. And now the nation knows.
I like that David Seaman sent Lee Dixon a cat emoji. And Lee... Why is Lee Dixon checking his fucking texts?
I think the thing is, Dixon's assumed he was talking about Pickford's cat-like reflexes, but Skull's right. He just means he's adopted another. He's fostered another cat. If you go through Lee Dixon's messages, actually, if you go through that old Arsenal back four's messages from David Seaman, it's just endless cat emojis. Oh, another one.
Fascinating detail.
Maybe it was one of his cats texting Lee Dixon. Anyway, what did you make of the game? Well, we'll come to that. This was just our initial reaction. We were trying to get like a live reaction to the game, but I suppose we've shown what we care about. So let's call it that, and I suppose we'll give our main reaction in the main bit of the podcast. So there we are.
It was relaxing, wasn't it? It was weird. You know what? Those games are not meant to be enjoyable, and it actually towards the end was. Pedestrian almost.
Yeah, really. It was, wasn't it? Well, it's England v France. It's what we said was going to happen, isn't it? The whole way through. It has come to pass that England will play France on Saturday.
You predicted this and it is happening.
How much do you want to talk about this before we talk about how you feel about England v France?
I think a little bit, yeah.
My mind is already on France. No, it's not.
Do you know what? I was making notes throughout the game and they're almost all exclusively... about the commentary. Do you want some more things that they said that I was astonished by? So John Stones and Harry Maguire are absolutely addicted to tea, specifically Yorkshire tea, and brought their own batch over, and the two of them just sit together drinking tea. And that this is kind of the bond. I quite like that, though.
Yeah, he said John Stones is particularly fussy about his tea as well.
I mean, this is really
as if Harry Maguire's going along with it, but John Stones is very insistent. John Stones reminds me of when Ringo Starr went to Rishikesh to visit Maharishi and packed baked beans. that was an interesting detail. I'd say that I like those kind of details.
Yeah.
I love all that kind of stuff.
I think as well it's a real kind of testament to how pedestrian the game was. That the commentary in that second half, just it was almost like they had to fill time. And Sam Matavos went deep into his kind of files to just drag out anything of note.
There was an element of entertainment. There was an element of test match special to it.
It was a bit, wasn't it? It's exactly like that. It was a slow Radio 4 broadcast almost.
Yeah.
Did you hear what John Stones got a new nickname? The Barnsley Beckenbauer.
Yeah, and I don't think Lee Dixon understood what was going on. Because he called him like the Barnsley Beckenbauer. He said he's got this new nickname, the Barnsley Beckenbauer. And then Lee Dixon said something like, oh, that's not on. Or something weird that implied he thought it was a slam.
Yeah. There's a few digs.
I think it's weird that's just come about. Because I'd say 5 years ago is when everyone was talking about how great John Stones was. Do you know what I mean? And he could have easily had the Barnsley Beckenbauer nickname then.
I think actually what we don't know is that Lee Dixon is really good friends with Beckenbauer. It's a bit of a slam about his mate.
That's why he was relieved. He was checking the David Seaman text because he was worried he was going to get one from Franz Beckenbauer saying, why didn't you fucking go into bat for me there?
There was a bit of was there tension between Matterface and Dixon, although I imagine it. There was a couple of barbs that Matterface chucked to Dixon, like...
Did you?
Yeah, when Lee Dixon... One of the running through lines of the second half was when Lee Dixon was going to start talking about the French game next week. And Lee Dixon said something like, I'm confident we're going to win. And Matterface responded like, unlike you, to get off the fence? And then there was probably about 40 seconds of silence. Yeah. Well, yeah. And I was thinking, I wonder what happens in that silence. It's like, is Dixon looking at Matterface? You know, is he drawing a line across his throat?
have they got a mute button? So is there a chance they're both muted? Yeah. Absolutely going, what the fuck was that? Are you fucking...
directors in their ear. Talk to each other. What's going on out there?
Yeah, weird one.
And do you know what? But also, how good is it to win on ITV? Because that's out the way now. Again, Southgate breaking barriers.
It's only in your head, but it's out. Presumably, it's BBC it's the BBC for the big one.
It's the BBC, yeah. Basically, we're at home for the rest of the tournament. Do you know what I mean?
We've got a home advantage. Semi-finals would be ITV, wouldn't it? Or does the semi-finals go to both?
I think they go to both.
The thing is, these days, semi-finals not that big a deal for England, is it? So I'm surprised it goes to both. So then, France, Spain, Brazil. To get to the final. Do you know what I was going to talk about? Holland v Argentina's quite a nice one for the 90s football fans, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because that is a classic 1998 quarterfinal, like an iconic game. What you don't remember about that is that could have been us in that game.
Of course.
Because that should have been... Could have been England v Holland. And then I was thinking about this, so I traced it through. I think we couldn't have been further from winning the 1998 World Cup.
Go on.
Because when we came out of our group, the run we had was Argentina, Holland, and then Holland lost to Brazil, who then lost to France. So we'd have had to beat Argentina, Holland, Brazil, and so France.
Right. I mean, taking on France in Paris.
Yeah. It's like the ultimate... awful. That loss to Romania in the group stage was catastrophic.
Yeah, we didn't stand a chance, did we?
No, we didn't stand to that. We absolutely didn't stand a chance. And I wonder if there was anyone in 1998 when they saw that run going, well, you've got to beat the team sometimes, haven't you? You've got to beat them at some point.
Yeah.
I just wish we didn't have France next. Can I ask something?
Yeah.
What the fuck all those stats at the bottom of the screen?
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. The one that... Some of them just aren't even interesting. Like, total receptions was one they put up in the second half.
Receptions between midfield and attack.
And I'm looking at it and I'm like, I think I understand this. This is the amount of times they've collected the ball between attacking and midfield. But what does that really tell me? What is it meant to tell me?
You're a tactics guy. Are you rubbing your hands with glee at that stat?
No, it's even too far for me. And I think there's no such thing as too much information and too much data. I'd like to see over the course of a tournament maybe a final breakdown of which teams were really good at those stats and how far they went as a result. But even then...
But it shouldn't be the one they bring up in every game. It's like one of its main stats. Possession, shots on goal. It's not like... It's getting more than them.
I think I saw a thing... Someone tweeted about Germany and XG, how they had the highest XG of the whole tournament.
Yeah.
And, you know, they went out of the group stages. So what does it even really mean?
Can I ask how you're feeling about England v France on Saturday night?
Well, I got a lot of stick in our football WhatsApp chat earlier because I said I just don't think France are that good. They're an average team with Mbappe in it. And I think it's been expected.
The whole thing was Ousmane Dembele was shit. Haven't we been saying that for years? Isn't the whole thing that Barcelona have been trying to offload him for about 20 years?
Yeah.
And now he's good and 24.
But one of the replies on that football group, which made me laugh, was, yeah, we're just an average team without Mbappe, which is totally fair.
I don't know if we are. Well, I'm starting to think that we could win it. I'm starting to feel like we could.
Can I pass something off from Five Live that I heard earlier?
Yeah.
As information. Because the thing is, we're going to do no punditry, but occasionally we'll just pass on in punditry we've heard. Who's the Julien Laurent, the French journalist? Do you know Julien Laurent?
Yeah.
He said that he thinks the British media and fans underrate the England squad, and actually within Europe everyone's quite scared of the England squad, and he said he thinks that the England front seven is the best in the World Cup.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's really interesting. I do think there is something to that. I think the history of England being rubbish at World Cups has led us to believe that we're not as good as we actually are. And the thing that gives me a lot of comfort is when you look at this England team, all of them pretty much are competing at the very top of football. Like, they're competing for the biggest honours, the Champions League. That wasn't the case in 98 and 96 and even 90. And when you look at this French team and everyone's going on about how good they are, like look at who they play for. Barcelona aren't the team they were in, like, even the noughties.
Yeah.
A lot of these players are kind of like... Arsenal mates have been moaning about Giroud for years. We know who Oliver Giroud is. Not some exotic foreigner like who you don't see every week. I know who he is.
One of the midfielders is the guy that everyone was going, I can't believe, man, you're actually considering buying this guy. He's a complete liability.
And they've got Hugo Lloris in goal. And it's like, I know Spurs mates who go, he's a liability. I know all these players. And I don't think they're as good as some of our players. So I think we've got a real chance, haven't we?
I don't share that same level of enthusiasm. I think France are the world champions. We can't forget that. They won the last World Cup. They have the best player in the world in Mbappe. I don't think we're far off them, but I think they are better than us. But that doesn't mean we're going to lose. I think the tricky thing is looking forward to this game, and it's sort of been the same across the World Cup, is that I can't feel anything other than sort of normality, because we're expected to lose against France. We're everything we're kind of expected to do, except for the USA game. But you, even then in the group stage, you know there's going to be a little bit of a banana skin in there somewhere. There's going to be a tough game. So I can't get overexcited, or I can't get nervous ahead of the game in the same way that I couldn't in that game, because there was a cagey 30 minutes. You know, if both of those chances that Senegal had fallen to Mbappe, we're 2-0 down and we're going out of the World Cup. So I think we just have to be slightly cautious. That being said, you know, roll on the weekend. I'm looking forward to it. I just feel like you said it early doors, Josh, it's just going to be a par World Cup for England. I think we'll play well. We'll lose. There'll be no complaints. There'll be no huge pendulous swing of emotions. And that'll be it. This whole World Cup will kind of fade from memory.
I think that's the interesting thing. I think this is a turning point game in the sense of... But it could never be that bad unless we get thrashed. But if we beat France, I don't feel at this point, because of our run through in 2018 and 2020... I was already looking at the final really early on because I was like, this is a good route. Because we've always had France in the quarters, I think I've always gone, oh, it's all going to end there. Were we to beat France, I think this World Cup would suddenly totally pivot.
Yeah.
And suddenly everyone in the nation would believe we were going to win the World Cup.
Yeah, I think the dam would burst in a way that we're not prepared for.
We'd become the favourites, wouldn't we?
Like, we're not ready. If we beat France, we are psychologically not ready.
Do you think? Yeah. Well, that's an interesting take.
The France game will be the 50th day that I haven't drunk.
And final day. That is a win or lose on the booze situation, isn't it?
No, if we lose, it's going to feel quite normal, I think. That's the thing we keep saying. It's not like the Germany game in the Euros, where it felt like if we lost,
we've had a bad Euros.
Yeah.
It's if we lose, I don't think it's like, oh well, it's Christmas.
I've got a thing on France that I want to say. I don't think they've played that well. I think it's really good for us in that they've won every time they've played their first 11. But they haven't actually played anyone ever any good. And we spoke about expected goals earlier. They actually lost the Poland game earlier today on expected goals. Poland had created better chances than the ones France converted. And actually, is it quite good? Because you saw the French, they were so cocky. They were absolutely the celebrations after the goals and the chin, you're like, I don't think they know they're not that good. I think it could be good for us. I think they're in a bad spot mentally that we could take advantage of. Is that mad, what I'm saying there?
I didn't really see the game. It feels inevitable we'll lose.
That's the pessimism. That's the pessimism we want. But imagine if we win.
Yeah, but that's at last. At last, I've got that feeling back.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time. It was England, Germany in the Euros. When you think, imagine if we win.
Yeah.
We haven't had that yet. We're probably going to win.
I'm going to be so tense this week. But do you know what's interesting? Today, I thought, I can imagine this team in those kits lifting the World Cup. I can see it when I close my eyes and imagine it. I don't think.
Yeah.
I can't imagine any other tournament, even 2018 in the Euros. I couldn't really imagine us what that would look like lifting the trophy, but I can see it happening this time. And I don't even know
what
that means.
What's interesting is, do you know what I imagine? Well, this isn't a weird one to imagine. I was imagining during the Senegal game. I imagined us going to the next Euros as world champions.
Yeah.
I just thought, oh, that, I could imagine that. Do you know what I mean? A Southgate, like, you know, and then we'd probably, like, go out in the quarters of the Euros or something and it would feel a bit weird.
Yeah.
Because everyone thought we were going to win that as well.
And it'd be like, what a sad end to the Southgate era.
Yeah, but let's look back at everything you achieved. Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. I think what gets me every time is how much I love this squad.
Yeah.
I love it.
I know.
I love them all. This was interesting. This was another bit of interesting on the commentary. They all go down and watch the games together on a big screen.
Oh, I love
Rather it. Than, he said, playing on their games consoles in their rooms. So are other football teams playing on separate PlayStations in their rooms?
Yeah. It's lovely. Anytime you see like the banter between them, it just looks great. It looks like they really get on. I don't know if you saw the clip. There were a few of them having dinner outside in their hotel and a bird shat on Luke Shaw. One, they were all, it's really, really funny to watch that happen. So they were like, look at like Jack Grealish, like, look, it's the bird up there. But also, good luck, isn't it? So,
oh, yeah, yeah.
It's great to see them all getting together, but also there's another good omen in there.
God, it's exciting now, isn't it?
This week is going to be so slow, isn't it? It's going to really drag. Also, I think, although you've plotted us to play Spain, I wouldn't bet against them losing. You know, in that those four teams in there, Portugal's in there, Morocco's in there. You know, there's going to be a shock. There always is. Someone,
do you think there'll be a shock?
There could
I'd
be.
I'd quite like Japan to beat Croatia, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I love Japan. I mean, not as much as I'd like South Korea to beat Brazil. I'd love Japan v South Korea in the quarterfinal.
Oh, imagine that'd be great. That would be great.
I really, really, really just want Portugal to go out so we can rule that out as happening.
What you
Who's
do? Would you
rather Portugal Brazil versus Portugal semi-final? Oh no, it's Portugal versus. So we might be facing Portugal in the semi-final.
Yeah, yeah, that is a potential.
Oh, that makes me feel physically sick.
In a weird way, I'd rather play Spain because they're quite intelligent. You know what I mean? They could just bore us to death and nick a goal.
Oh god!
Whereas Spain would try and play football, and I think
I'd prefer to lose to Spain because I could deal with Spain winning the World Cup. But I don't. I wouldn't watch a Brazil v Portugal final. There's just no good outcome. Ronaldo or Neymar, take your pick.
Oh boy.
But let's not
worry
about that hypothetical.
Yeah.
No. So, great day.
Great day.
Very easy.
Very easy. Like, yeah. I didn't really foresee.
And now it begins.
Yeah, again. Now it begins again.
Final talking point that came up right near the end. The Jack Grealish playing, is it Sam Matterface's terminology or is it the general terminology? The draft excluder role. Behind the wall.
Yeah, this is a new thing, isn't it?
What do you make of that?
I totally get why they do it. You've seen, you know, Messi or other players, free kick specialists, score the goals like that. I think you made the point on the group though, Josh. It's like, do you want to be that person? That's the most humiliating role, isn't it? In a defensive free kick, if you're lining up, you're so ineffective, you've got to lie on the floor.
but would you? It's interesting, isn't it? Because I was looking to see whether he was going to look over his shoulder. He doesn't. He totally faces away. Like,
yeah, which so, I find odd. Because why would you? Why wouldn't you face it? Like, if it's like that's part of the danger of being in the
arms.
Wall. Yeah, but that's natural. What if you put them behind your back and you lie front
face? You'd lie face on with your arms behind your back. So you it's kind of watch it traveling towards your face, and you can't move.
There's nothing you can do facing it. The only two things you're doing is getting yourself kicked in the face or kicked in the balls, like for no good reason. Yeah.
But surely a ball to the back of the head, unaware, unbraced, is like one of the most dangerous blows you can receive.
And then, like, kind of coquettishly look over your shoulder.
Paint me like one of your French girls. But it's, I think the fact that you lay there almost certainly negates that it's going to get kicked against you anyway. So maybe Chris is right. Maybe maybe you could lay there sort of
coyly, seductively,
and just put the kicker off with a little kiss.
You don't even need to be all of you down, so you could have one leg up, couldn't you? Like, why don't you, like, you could go up and down, like in Crazy Golf. So if you did, like, press-ups, yeah, and then they've got to time it perfectly.
That would be a deterrent. That would be a deterrent.
That'd be actually better for the wall to do, wouldn't it? I think it'd be more off-putting if the wall were jumping up and down all at different times.
like a whack-a-mole.
Exactly.
Like a whack-a-wall.
If all six members of the wall were going up and down at different times, it would be so off-putting. And you'd have to time your kick completely right.
I like it.
Why don't you have... You could have two banks of a wall, each slightly apart, with gaps between them, and they could be, like, oscillating, like, moving backwards and forwards, shuffling.
I think you're in danger of leaving a lot of men unmarked, but I like it as a defensive system.
Anyway, it's been an absolute pleasure. So we'll try and get through a lot more of the correspondence, because there's so much good stuff in the next one. And we'll look ahead to the quarterfinals, although we've already run out of things to say about England versus France.
Quarterfinals of a World Cup, eh?
Do you remember when getting to the quarterfinals was a big thing?
Huge thing.
Oh, by the way, England have had a better group stage than any winner since 2002. There's an example of why group stages aren't actually... You never get... The winner never smashes group stages. Well, I can't wait for Saturday night.
Oh, it's going to be huge, isn't it? How are we going to get through this week?
I'm so glad it's a Saturday night.
Well, all that to look forward to. England in a quarterfinal of a World Cup. Here we go again.
See you then.
All right, that's it for this week. Don't go too far. Eric Cantona.
Go, Les! Hit Les! Hit Les over the top!